with the greatest pleasure that I call this special convocation to order. Please remain standing as we begin. As we begin with a prayer, followed by the singing of America the Beautiful. The audience is invited to join our soloist in the singing of verse 4. The words appear on the back of your program.
Let us pray. Let us now praise famous men, and let us remember to honor goodness as much as greatness. Cast a gracious eye, we beseech thee, O God, on this college and this occasion in which we honor one of its sons. Let his good example of honorable public service inspire all of us to acts of loving kindness in matters great and small. Help us to remember that to do good is to be good, and cause us to take up with joy the small duties of this day. Mindful of all that is past, for which we are grateful, and all that is to come, for which we are hopeful, we surrender this day our college, our senator, and ourselves to the tender mercies of God, who has promised to be with us until time is no more. In the name of that very same God, we say, Amen.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountain majesties above thy fruited plain. America, America, God shed his grace on thee, and crown thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea. Oh, beautiful for patriot green, for seas beyond the years, thine alabaster cities gleam, undimmed by human tears. America, America, God shed
Mr. Vice President, Senators, members of Congress, and distinguished guests, it's a special honor to be here today, and I'm very grateful to President Faust for the invitation to participate in this extraordinary occasion. Now, I'm speaking not as a judge or a professor, but I'm speaking as a former member of the Kennedy staff. And I'm going to tell you a few of the lessons that the senator taught me. Now, you put yourself back in 1979 and 80. Senator Kennedy was chairman of the Judiciary Committee. I was his chief counsel. And now, from the start, he wanted cooperation among the Democrats and Republicans. And when there were disagreements sometimes, but when they arose, he'd tell us just what to do. Work it out! Work it out! It's always possible. Now, he had Ken Feinberg, who was his former office chief of staff and a member of the Judiciary staff, would join me for breakfast every single morning with Emory Sneeden, who was Senator Thurman's, the Republicans, chief minority counsel. We'd drink our coffee, and we'd plan the day together with an eye towards minimizing the partisan disagreements and maximizing results. On days when a public meeting of the committee was scheduled, we'd try to make certain that every senator knew what was likely to take place, and our goal, if possible, was to have no heated arguments, no surprises. And those simple breakfast meetings did help bring about the harmony and the results that the senator desired. But suddenly, one day, close to the 1980 election, Senator Thurman decided to stop the breakfast meetings. So that very afternoon, the committee was supposed to meet and vote on the confirmation of several judicial nominations. It began in public, and a little argument began about the nominees. And it became more heated, and their qualifications became a matter of dispute, and voices were raised, and they went higher and higher. And before you know it, senators began to shake their fists. In the midst of that chaos, Senator Kennedy turned to me, shook his head, and he said, "Well, what did they teach you about how to deal with this at Harvard?" Well, he didn't wait for my reply. He divided the nominees into different groups. He assigned a senator to each. He adjourned the meeting, and then he went to see Senator Thurman and persuaded him to lift the ban on bipartisan staff meetings. The committee returned to getting its work done, and everything did work out. We hope. I learned a great deal from Senator Kennedy about how to be effective working with others. He did want results, and he'd tell us, for example, that if you want a particular result, don't worry too much about getting credit. Now, he would say, be generous with the credit. Tell others what good ideas they have. If you're successful, he'd say, there'll be plenty of credit to go around. And if you're not successful, who wants the credit for that? And that's a pretty good lesson for life. But seriously, I think the most important word was a single word that I heard him say at a staff reunion, which I think reflects how he acts. Several hundred current and former staff members and families were gathered under a tent in Hyannis, and the senator recited some family history. He told us that his father had told him that what you should do in life is to gather able men and women of different backgrounds and talents around you, and then get them to, and then this is the word, I think, simple word, help. Help each other. Help the senator you work for. Above all, help those who need your help the most. Now that's what I think it is. Senator Kennedy's life has been about achieving goals that do that very thing. And he's devoted 46 incredible years in the Senate to doing it. Well, think of a few things. Think of the neighborhood health centers. In his first term as a senator, he noticed how well a neighborhood health center started right here in Boston was serving people in poverty. In 1966, he passed a bill that made that center a model. And today, based on that model, we have amazing health center networks in all 50 states. Think of health insurance. Insurance that travels along with workers when they change their jobs. Think of special health insurance for children. Of parity in insurance between physical and mental illnesses, of schools that eventually will no leave no child behind, of a nation that cares about citizens with disabilities. Now there I've just mentioned six of Senator Kennedy's successful legislative efforts. I could mention 60 or even 600, and that wouldn't count them all. Think of what he's done to help assure the American man and woman of a decent job at a decent pay, to make America's promise of fair and equal treatment a reality for minorities, for women. Then think of his work for immigrants, for refugees throughout the world. Consider his efforts to stop the spread of nuclear weapons, to prevent unnecessary wars. Indeed, if you are a student here today, and you're 18, or 19, or 20 years old, and if you voted in last month's presidential election, you were able to do that because in 1970, Senator Kennedy lowered the voting age from 21 to 18. Now, in doing all of this, he's endlessly reached across the aisle, becoming a symbol of what Americans can do when they work together cooperatively in public life. That is the essence of the accomplishment that Harvard honors today with this degree and with this special convocation. I'm proud that this university I love is bestowing this honorary degree on an eminently deserving son of Harvard whom I admire immensely and who will forever rank among the nation's greatest senators. I'm sure that this degree means the world to him. I came of age in the early years of the new frontier, and I know how proud his brothers, Jack Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy, how proud his family would be, is, as Harvard honors their younger brother. 46 years ago, the senator took up the Kennedy call to public service, and ever since, he has dedicated his own life to helping his country make impossible dreams become a reality for countless Americans and for millions around the world. I'm proud to be here now, as Harvard says, "Well done, Senator, and thank you for caring so much about so many for so long. Our Commonwealth, our country, and our world are stronger, fairer, and better places because of all you have achieved." Thank you, Senator, so very much.
I am a part of all that I have met. This line comes from Tennyson's Ulysses, a poem the Honorable Edward Moore Kennedy has quoted on memorable occasions in the past. I am a part of all that I have met. It's hard to think of a public figure who, over nearly half a century, has been more a part of all that he has met. Think of all that he has met. All he has experienced, all he has fought for since he was first elected to serve in the United States Senate in 1962. Through 9, soon to be 10 presidents, Senator Kennedy has worked tirelessly on behalf of society's most vulnerable members, the poor, the unemployed, the disabled, the elderly, the seriously ill, veterans wounded in battle, newcomers from foreign lands, men and women facing bias in employment, in housing, children deprived of the chance for a decent start in life. He has met them by the thousands, and he has made himself a part of their struggles and of their hopes for a better life. "The poor may be out of political fashion," he said nearly 3 decades ago, "but they are not without human needs. The middle class may be angry, but they have not lost the dream that all Americans can advance together." Edward Kennedy has made these dreams his own. Pressing his own party to support one of his many efforts to increase the minimum wage, he put it simply, "With some of these issues, you believe in them and feel them, and you ought to fight for them." And fought he has. For decades, he has worked with passion and compassion to expand access to health care for all Americans, people between jobs, people with pre-existing medical conditions, people who lack the means to pay for expensive prescription drugs, people suffering from mental illness, children with special needs, children without access to basic nutrition or essential vaccines. All of them, many millions of them, are better off because of his unrelenting commitment to their well-being. And he's not stopping now. Senator Kennedy has returned to Washington this fall to fight for the cause of his life, medical coverage for every American. As in all things, he's taken up this cause not as an abstract matter of policy, but as a deeply felt political commitment. "The point," he has said, "is to have some positive impact on people's lives. The danger as a legislator is that you get involved with just passing the bill. You can lose the context of what passing the bill means, and then you're just shuffling papers, and you lose that emotional contact. Maybe some people could do it. I think I'd run dry pretty quick." With 46 years and counting, he's done anything but run dry, and the people he has touched extend across our state, our nation, and around the globe. He has helped shape debate on the international challenges and conflicts of our age, the Cold War and nuclear arms control, Vietnam and the plight of its refugees, South Africa and the injustice of apartheid, Northern Ireland and the quest for peace, 9/11 and the fight against terror, and in his role as a leading and principled critic of the war in Iraq, and in his deep concern for those displaced by that conflict. And there is, of course, much more. His leadership on labor and employment, his work on energy and environment, his efforts on behalf of the judiciary and of civil rights. Edward Kennedy delivered his first major speech in the Senate on behalf of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and he acted as a leader in the passage of the Voting Rights Act the following year. Nearly a half century later, he serves as key Senate sponsor of the Civil Rights Act of 2008. He has been a voice of conscience and commitment and a model of effectiveness in this most central transformation of American life, realizing the promise of opportunity and equality for all. But perhaps his most legendary achievement occurred on a snowy day 53 Novembers ago, when, as a not especially fleet-footed but exceptionally sure-handed wide receiver, he scored the Crimson's only touchdown in the Harvard-Yale game of 1955. Take a glance at the Senator's official website and you'll see a crisp biographical sketch. The first four paragraphs matter-of-factly recite some of his career milestones. The other three paragraphs evoke the football career that might have been. When still in his senior year, he received an overture from the soon-to-be-mighty Green Bay Packers. Now, fortunately for all of us who are not from Wisconsin, he turned them down. He said that he intended instead, and I'm quoting, to go into another contact sport, politics. His decision to shelve his shoulder pads in favor of the family business has turned out to be especially consequential for all of us who make our lives in the world of education. President Kennedy once declared that the human mind is our fundamental resource, and education is our fundamental means to convert that resource to its highest and best use. Edward Kennedy's Senate career has long exemplified that truth. He has played a critical role in the effort to reform the nation's public schools. And the progress of early childhood education in America owes no small debt to Senator Kennedy's leadership from the earliest days of Head Start. Famous for his special magic with children, Senator Kennedy has for years visited an elementary school in Washington to read once a week in the classroom. Particularly noteworthy, I gather, is his virtuoso rendition of the Itsy Bitsy Spider. Perhaps he'll give us a version of it later. And no United States Senator has committed more of his time, his energy, and his wisdom to the advancement of American higher education. Thanks to him, students across the economic spectrum have opportunity to pursue their ambitions. When in the mid-90s, the majority in Congress threatened to cut federal student aid, busloads of students from Massachusetts magically appeared in the hearing room on Capitol Hill to stare down those poised to support what Senator Kennedy described as a budget Marie Antoinette would love, let them eat cake. Needless to say, funding for student aid was restored. Thanks to him and his unflagging support for research, scholars, especially biomedical scientists, have greater opportunity to discover new knowledge, knowledge with the potential to improve the human condition. American colleges and universities, in their long history, have had few more dedicated friends. Through all of this, he has earned a reputation on both sides of the aisle as one of the ablest, most energetic, most influential, most broad-gauged, most admired members of the United States Senate. He advocates his beliefs with compelling force, and yet he shapes consensus with consummate skill. He is a fierce fighter, but an even fiercer friend. He pursues his causes with deadly seriousness, but also with exuberance and lively wit. He is a national leader, but a local servant. He belongs to all of us, to his family, who rely on his exceptionally broad shoulders and caring spirit, to his beloved Vicky, his partner and anchor these past 16 years, to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, which he has served with extraordinary attentiveness and skill, to the nation and to the world. There are abundant examples of legislation with titles that embody his successful bipartisanship. The numerous Kennedy-Hatch bills represent but one manifestation of effective aisle-crossing alliances. And in 2003, a tribute was made to his capacity to transcend the partisan divide when he was honored with the George Bush Award for Excellence in Public Service. It says something about him that this year's Republican nominee for president called him simply, and I quote, the single most effective member of the United States Senate. His biographer took it a step further. He deserves recognition not just as the leading senator of our time, but as one of the greats in its history. Or perhaps the senator said it best himself in words he's used to describe his dog, who accompanies him to work on Capitol Hill every day. He runs like a champ and never gives up. There's only one school within Harvard University that's named for someone other than John Harvard, and that school is named for John Kennedy. The Kennedy School is devoted to the ideal and the practice of public service. It draws its essence from the conviction that if we are willing to see beyond ourselves and to invest in the common good, we can create a more humane and enlightened world. The Kennedy School's home was dedicated in 1978. You will have no doubt who served as the featured speaker. He took the occasion to invoke President Kennedy's understanding of what he called the overwhelming need for greater talent and ability in public service. More than any other public figure in our recent history, the senator said of his brother, he believed in the power of individual citizens to make a difference, to improve their lives and the lives of those around them. He understood the awesome power of intelligence married to commitment, the irresistible force of an idea in the mind of a man or woman educated to serve the public. His greatest gift was the ability to reach the hearts of others, to plant a seed of hope in barren lives, to nurture new ideas in fertile minds, to inspire the young to devote a portion of their lives to the well-being of their own communities and lift up others less fortunate than themselves. What Edward Kennedy said of his brother 30 years ago, we see and we celebrate in his own extraordinary career. We gather at what feels to be a weighty moment in the history of our nation and of the world, a moment fraught with economic uncertainty and the specter of conflicts yet unresolved. At the same time, we face a historic transition in our nation's leadership with the election of a president who a century before his birth would not have been granted the right to vote or even accorded the status of citizen. At such a moment, the call to public service sounds with special resonance. We all confront the question of how we can contribute to improving not only our own lives, but the lives of others. We all have the opportunity to plant new seeds of hope and to nurture new ideas in fertile minds. Together, we are challenged to consider how we can make ourselves more a part of all that we have met and all that we are still to meet. As we do, we take profound and continuing inspiration from the vision, the reason, and the courage of a man who, even two decades ago, was recognized by my predecessor, Derek Bach, as Harvard's most impressive living embodiment of lifelong dedication to public service. The man who will never let us forget that the cause endures, the hope still lives. The Honorable Edward M. Kennedy. You have to let me give him his degree, then you can start all over again, okay? Let me begin by reading the citation that accompanies the degree. Resolute in pursuit of opportunity for all, dauntless in sailing against the wind, a statesman for all seasons with a singular devotion to country, commonwealth, and the common good. By virtue of the authority delegated to me by the governing boards, I confer the honorary degree of Doctor of Laws on the senior United States Senator from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Edward M. Kennedy.
Thank you, President Faust. Thank you, Steve Breyer. Thank you, Yo-Yo Ma. And thank you for being here, Joe Biden, the Vice President-elect of the United States. There is Joe. Now I have something in common with George Washington, other than being born on February 22nd. It is not, as I had once hoped, being president. It is the rare, rare privilege of receiving an honorary degree from Harvard at a special convocation. I am moved and deeply grateful to my university. It was exactly 100 years ago, this September, that my father entered Harvard College as a freshman, to be followed in the next generation by Jack, Joe, and Bobby, and then by me. At home here at Harvard, which became a second home, I learned to prize history, to play football, and to believe in public service. It was long ago, but I see it now, as fresh as youth and yesterday. And I hope that in all the time since then, I have lived up to the chance that Harvard gave to me. And along the way, I have also learned lessons in the school of life, that we should take ourselves seriously, but never take others too seriously, that political differences may make us opponents, but should never make us enemies, that battles rage and then quiet. Above all, I have seen throughout my life how we as a people can rise to a challenge, embrace change, and renew our destiny. So there is no other time when I would rather receive this honor than this year at this turning point in American history. Just 1 month ago, our citizens powerfully reaffirmed the promise of America. That promise has been crucial to my service and to the contributions of my brothers, and to the age-old dreams of millions. Long after Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, long after Brown versus Board of Education, long after a young Baptist minister stood on the steps of Lincoln's memorial and called the nation to the dream of equality. The moment is finally here. The time is now. And the long march of progress has arrived at one extraordinary day in American history. We elected a 44th president who, by virtue of his race, could have been legally owned by 16 presidents of the United States previously. We judged him, as Martin Luther King said, not by the color of his skin, but by the content of his character and the capacity of his leadership. For America, this is not just a culmination, but a new beginning. Because in Barack Obama, we will now have a president who offers not just the audacity, but the possibility, a hope of one America, strong and prosperous, free to shining sea. I am proud to have played a small part in this giant step forward in our history and in the public life of our Commonwealth and this country for so many years. 50 years ago, I managed the successful re-election campaign for the junior senator from Massachusetts, John F. Kennedy, and although I certainly did not anticipate it at the time, I myself have been deeply honored to hold the same seat he had for some 46 years. During my service in the United States Senate, I have often been called a liberal, and it usually was not meant to be a compliment. But I remember what my brother said about liberalism shortly before he was elected president. He said, if by a liberal, they mean someone who looks ahead and not behind, someone who welcomes new ideas without rigid reactions, someone who cares about the welfare of the people, their health, their housing, their schools, their jobs, their civil rights, their civil liberties, someone who believes we can break through the stalemate and suspicion that grips us. If that is what they mean by a liberal, I am proud to be a liberal. I said in Denver last summer, for me, this is a season of hope. Since I was a boy, I have known the joy of sailing the waters off Cape Cod. And for all my years in public life, I have believed that America must sail towards the shores of liberty and justice for all. No, there is no end to that journey, only the next great voyage. We know the future will outlast all of us, but I believe that all of us will live on in the future we make. In that spirit, I thank Harvard for this great honor, and I thank Massachusetts for the privilege of serving its people and its principles. I have lived a blessed time. Now with you, I look forward to a new time of aspiration and high achievement for our nation and the world. Thank you.
Ain't gonna let nobody
turn me round.
Ain't gonna let nobody
turn me.
I'm gonna keep on and talking all the way up to freedom land. Oh, ain't gonna let nobody
turn me round.
Ain't gonna let nobody
turn me around.
I'm gonna keep on and talking all the way up to freedom, man. Oh, now let me tell you about a man named Moses and his battle with the Pharaoh. See, after hundreds of years of captivity, said it was time to let his people go. So he led God's people out of Egypt land, about as far as the Red Sea. And then he falls on a head, as he said, not even an ocean can stop me. And I ain't gonna let nobody
turn me around.
Turn me around. Struggles each and every day, and at times it feels like your world is crumbling down, but just hear what I have to say, that on this road we trod every day, the trials that we must face, but if we never give up, and we never give in, then I know we can finish the race, and I ain't gonna let nobody.
Joining us for this special occasion. The meeting is now adjourned. Please rise for the singing of Fair Harvard, after which we ask that you remain at your seat until the president and her party have left the stage and the house lights are turned up.